Healthy Alternatives. Both research and real-life experiences are making it clear every day that our traditional medical system and practices need to be rethought, revised, and recharged in light of a more holistic approach to health. Dr. Jerry V. Teplitz, host of Healthy Alternatives, has been a pioneer for 36 years in stress management and optimum health. With a Ph.D. in holistic health sciences, a law degree, and as the author of 8 books, all focused on health, stress management, and performance, Dr. Teplitz is uniquely qualified to help us explore and incorporate healthy alternatives into our daily lives. He is a professional speaker and has shared his wisdom with over 1 million people. Join him to reach your highest level of health and wellness. Now, here's Dr. Teplitz.
Welcome to Healthy Alternatives. I'm Dr. Jerry Teplitz, and you're listening to WebTalkRadio.net. What Healthy Alternatives is about is we all want to live longer, enjoy life more. We want to reach optimum levels of health, wellness. That's what I attempt to bring you on each of the Healthy Alternative shows. My guest I'll be talking to a little bit later is Meadow Lynn. She's a speaker, writer, and chef. The chef part started when she was 3 years old. She created her first dish. When she was 18, she started working with her mom, Denise Lynn, a world-renowned healer and teacher, and started catering her mother's retreats. While cooking for these retreats during a summer vacation, Meadows saw the powerful connection between not just what we eat, but how we eat and how we feel. She now writes a blog called Savior of the Day. She wrote a cookbook with her mom called The Mystic Cookbook, The Secret Alchemy of Food. And we're going to be exploring food in a very unique way as we talk to Meadow Lynn in just a few minutes. Every week, I like to begin the show by talking about an issue of concern you should know about because it can have a real impact on you. And then a little bit later, I talk about a healthy breakthrough. It's the newest discoveries, latest information about healthy alternatives you can use for yourself, your family, and loved ones. And I want to combine both today. First, talk about the issue side, and this relates to rheumatoid arthritis. At least 2 million Americans have what's called definite or classic rheumatoid arthritis. It's a number that's actually been increasing in recent years, and it's a very devastating illness. By the way, this is not the same condition as far as the more common and generally less serious osteoarthritis or degenerative joint disease. Most patients with rheumatoid arthritis have a progressive disability. Less than 1% of people with the disease wind up having spontaneous remissions. Some disability winds up occurring in 50 to 70% of people within 5 years after the onset of rheumatoid arthritis. Half will stop working within 10 years. The annual cost of this disease in this country is estimated to be over $1 billion, and most medical authorities believe remissions are actually very rare. We're going to be looking at, in the next part, when I talk about the healthy alternatives, some things you can actually do to change those statistics if you do have or you do get rheumatoid arthritis. If you want to know more about me, Dr. Jerry Teplitz, you can go to teplitz.com, T-E-P-L-I-T-Z.com, and you can follow me on Twitter and Facebook. I also do a free monthly e-newsletter. It's health, nutrition, wellness-oriented, called the Teplitz Report, and in it, I focus on things I don't normally share with you on healthy alternatives. You can sign up for that by going to teplitz.com. You'll see the Home About button. You'll get a drop-down menu, and you can sign up there. So I'd like to talk to you now about the healthy breakthroughs related to rheumatoid arthritis. And there's new research that was published just recently showing that curcumin, which is the active ingredient in the curry spice turmeric, possesses anti-inflammatory and anti-arthritic properties. The study that was reported used a highly bioavailable form of curcumin And what they found, it was more effective in alleviating rheumatoid arthritis symptoms, including tenderness, swelling of joints, than the drugs. Those who were taking only the curcumin actually experienced the most improvement overall. Curcumin also, for that group, had another benefit, a lack of any observed adverse effects. Things went so great that not a single person withdrew from the study due to side effects, whereas when they were comparing folks with NSAID, the drugs that they were giving them, 14% of the people dropped out. Another study done a little earlier in 2006 found that turmeric supplements, which contain these curcuminoids, profoundly lessen joint inflammation and destruction. So curcumin is most known for its anti-inflammatory properties, and it winds up influencing about 700 genes in the body, but it also now has this impact on rheumatoid arthritis. What's the dose you need? You need 3 grams of bioavailable curcumin extract taken 3 or 4 times a day. Now, this can be difficult to do using regular curcumin powders. They're just not that bioavailable. How can you make them more bioavailable? You can actually create a microemulsion yourself, combining a tablespoon of curcumin powder, not turmeric, but curcumin, with 1 to 2 egg yolks and a teaspoon of melted coconut butter. Then use a hand blender and high speed and emulsify it all. Another strategy you can use is take 1 tablespoon of curcumin powder and 1 quart of boiling water. And the water must be boiling first when you add the powder. Now, you boil for about 10 minutes. You've now created a 12% solution. You can drink this once it is cooled. Now, curcumin gradually starts to come out of the mixture. So after about 6 hours, it's a 6% solution. So you want to drink it within 4 hours. Another thing you can add to what you're doing is what's called naltrexone. If you take that at a low dose, it can help you wean off toxic drugs that most rheumatoid arthritis patients are taking. Astaxanthin is also a powerful anti-inflammatory oxidant that can also help control joint pain. And the other recommendation would be for taking 4 to 6 ounces daily of fermented vegetables to get the probiotic benefit of that. While you can take a pill of probiotics that might have a billion beneficial bacteria on it, just taking 4 to 6 ounces a day of fermented veggies will give you 10 trillion beneficial bacteria. You should also look at eliminating fructose and most grains from what you're eating. And also you need to look at doing exercise and taking vitamin D, around 10,000 units of vitamin D3 per day. If you do take vitamin D, you're looking to get yourself into therapeutic range of 65 to 80 ng per milliliter. So there are now a whole range of natural things you can do to really help you reduce the pain and the difficulties of rheumatoid arthritis. Before I bring on my guest, Meadow Lynn, I'd like to talk to you about a book I have that's called Managing Your Stress in Difficult Times, Succeeding in Times of Change. It's been a difficult time out there. While things are starting to look up, it's not over yet. So you've got stress coming at you. The question becomes, what can you do about it? This book is full of tools and techniques you can use immediately to handle those stresses that you're experiencing. So you can get Managing Your Stress in Difficult Times, Succeeding in Times of Change at Amazon.com, or you go to my website, teplitz.com, click the products button, and you can go in there to order it.
My guest today is Meadow Lynn. She's a speaker, writer, and chef. She was a gourmet from birth. Cosmeto created her first dish when she was 3 years old. She's the daughter of Denise Lynn, a world-renowned healer and teacher. When Meadow was 18, as a self-taught chef and lover of all things edible, she started catering her mother's retreats, and she's still doing that today. When cooking for these retreats during her summer vacations, Meadow saw the powerful connection between not just what we eat, but also how we eat and how we feel. She writes a blog called Savor the Day, which is about life, love, and good food. She's the co-author of Quest, a guide for creating your own vision quest, and the Mystic Cookbook, The Secret Alchemy of Food. And we're going to be talking about the Mystic Cookbook with Meadow today. So Meadow, welcome to Healthy Alternatives.
Thank you so much. It's such a joy to be here, Jerry.
So what was that first dish you prepared when you were 3 years old, and you call it gourmet level today?
Well, you know, I was raised on a pretty healthy diet. Not many kids back then let me take a step back, I guess. As a young child, I didn't eat dairy, sugar, wheat, or I guess those are the main three. So we had what you would call pretty healthy ingredients in our cupboards. So I think what I ended up making when I crawled up with the use of the chair into the upper cabinets was something I called tahini balls. I took tahini, which is a sesame paste, and I rolled that with cocoa. And I must have put some honey in there as a sweetener, and then I rolled it in shredded dried coconut. And I remember putting them on a little plate and walking around, passing them out to my parents, kind of cocktail party style. So they're not your typical treats probably a young child would make.
Can you send me a few? They sound good.
they actually are delicious. I recently recreated the recipe, and I posted on my blog, and it had been years since I'd had them, and boy, were they good. I was amazed. I had many failures, you know, after that along the road to learning how to cook. But those ones, my first foray was pretty tasty.
Great. Now, because you've worked with your mom, you cooking, she doing seminars, what's been like in that kind of environment?
You know, it's been quite a journey, a wonderful journey. And I started, as you said in your intro, I started at about 18, right after I finished high school. I started spending my summers cooking for my mom's retreats, and it's been fun as we worked on this project together, writing the Mystic Cookbook, to look back at my journey as a cook, as a chef, whatever you want to call it, I guess. When I first started cooking for the retreats, you know, I'd put cereal out in the box and the, you know, mustard or jam, whatever, in the jars. And my mom told me, no, you should, you know, please put it in a dish. And as any 18-year-old will do, I rebelled against that. I didn't want to do it, she told me. But I came to understand the importance of beauty and not just taste. Back at that time, I really saw food as just something that either tasted good or not good. And through the years that I've worked with my mom and I've served all of our guests at our ranch, I've come to understand also that there are so many other factors in our meals. One of them being presentation and beauty actually affects the taste and your experience of it. But there's also so many other factors as well as the energy and the love and joy that goes into it.
So what then got you to the point where you said, I need to do this book called The Mystic Cookbook?
That, too, has been a journey. My mom and I decided about 3 years ago we wanted to work on this project together, and it's been 3 years in its gestation and birthing, if you will, that kind of blending her background in mind-body-spirit work and spirituality with my background in food and cooking and eating, because most people who like to cook also like to eat, and blending our two passions. We were a little nervous at first, wondering how that would be, mother and daughter working together, because we've worked together, as you said, for many years, but we had very defined roles. It's very different working on a project together as collaborators But the secret alchemy of food seems to have infused everything that we did and brought even us as mother and daughter closer together. So
yeah, because your mom couldn't say to you, put it in a dish
right.
when you go off. Now, your view is the Mystic Cookbook is not a cookbook in the traditional sense. So what do you mean by that?
As we've been calling it, kind of, it's a cookbook for your life in a way, and I know that sounds kind of grandiose, but it does include a number of original recipes. They're all recipes that I have created and tested and retested and eaten many test batches and served them to the guests at our ranch. But it's so much more than that in a way, too. It goes into, how will I say it, talk about a lot of ancient wisdom and native cultures and different cuisines and different food practices from around the world. And we look at the energy of food and how you can infuse energy and thoughts and passion into your cooking that will heighten the meals. So by eating well and treating yourself as you would an honored guest and by putting that love and joy in your food, we talk about ways that you can increase the vibration of your food and you can live more joyously and healthily and happy, and all of that simply by the way that you approach your meals. So in that way, it's a cookbook for your life as well as a book with recipes.
Great. And just for my listeners who may have experienced one of my seminars where I do that muscle checking work, I've actually been able to demonstrate that somebody holds a like sugar in their hand and you press on their arm's going to go down easily. They hold an almond, their arm will stay very strong. So the life energy you're talking about, Meadow, I've actually been able to demonstrate. Plus, if you have people bless that sugar or say a prayer on it,
mm-hmm.
it'll actually check strong for not only them, for anybody else who I do the checking on. So I know exactly what you're talking about.
That's
been
amazing.
Able to show it.
I was going to say, as a child who was raised on tahini and cocoa powder, I was also raised on muscle testing.
Oh, cool.
Not your typical childhood.
Becoming more typical nowadays.
It is.
Now, your subtitle of the book is The Secret Alchemy of Food, and alchemy people normally mean is, you know, the notion of turning stuff into gold and things like that. So how are you defining alchemy and what the secret is?
Right. Of course, as you said, you know, the traditional alchemy is taking a base metal and transforming it into gold. Those alchemists of yore were not, unfortunately, successful with that. But we're using the word alchemy to mean the same idea of taking basic ingredients, things that you can find at a supermarket or your local farmer's market in your back garden, even at a convenience store, and transforming them either through the cooking process or through the energy and love and thoughts and prayers that you put into it, and transforming it into something much more than the sum of their parts. And that is the secret alchemy of food, that you can take these simple ingredients and turn them into love or to a really tasty meal when you blend them together, that there is, you know, by doing prayers or, you know, I like to dance and sing when I cook, and it really makes a difference. As you said, when you put the prayers into the sugar, when you do the muscle testing, it makes a difference. I find that when I dance and sing in the kitchen and I have fun, that all goes into the food and people can taste that.
So how do you relate foods to people on their own spiritual path?
You know, there's a lot of different ways to answer that question. One
pick one, anyone.
Where I'll start, yeah. is my mom spent 2.5 years in a Zen Buddhist monastery in her 20s. She had she'd had a pretty traumatic childhood. At age 17, she had been shot by a random kind of mentally unstable man. And she had even had a near-death experience. She'd been in the hospital for a long time, lost a lot of organs. And then she ended up in this Zen Buddhist monastery. So it ended up being one of the most peaceful times in her life. She spent 2.5 years sitting seishen. They come and they hit you with a stick if you if they think that you might be thinking. And
falling asleep.
Yeah, exactly. And in that time, she said it was very peaceful. It was one of the first times in her life where there was some order. But she didn't get enlightened. She learned how to pat her shoulders so the stick didn't hurt as much when they hit you, you know. And through that and through a number of other experiences, we've come to understand, and we go into more detail in the book, that enlightenment and spiritual growth doesn't need to come from suffering. It can, but it doesn't need to. A lot of people have the idea that in order to grow spiritually, it needs to be rigorous or challenging or hard or painful. But the truth is you can grow by leaps and bounds by being joyful and experiencing joy and happiness. And in the book, we go into detail about ways that you can do that with your meals, by the way that you approach your food, by the way that you eat, by the way you choose the ingredients, by the energy that you put into it, and it can lead you to spiritual growth. And then we talk about other things as well that you can, you know, that you can use food to ignite past lives. You can have chakra meals to open your chakras. You know, it depends how in depth, how woo-woo you want to get, if you will, you know, but it's all in there.
So before we continue our woo-woo discussion, I'd like to remind you, you're listening to Healthy Alternatives, Dr. Jerry Teplitz on webtalkradio.net. And we'll be back with my guest, Meadow Lynn, in just a moment.
Are you enjoying what you hear on Healthy Alternatives? Does it make a difference in your life? If it does, I would like to ask a favor of you. I'd appreciate it if you'd be willing to tweet, put on your Facebook page about the show, and give folks a link so that they also can learn about what I'm sharing on Healthy Alternatives. If you do decide to do that, I just want to say thank you for taking the time.
So my guest today is Meadow Lynn. She's a speaker, writer, and chef. She's a gourmet from birth. She prepared her first dish when she was 3 years old, and we talked about that, and it sounded wonderful. She's the daughter of Denise Lynn, a world-renowned healer and teacher. And she, since she's been 18, has been as a self-taught chef and lover of things edible, has been catering her mother's retreats. They have jointly written a book called The Mystic Cookbook, The Secret Alchemy of Food. And Meadow, you were talking a little bit about this, but you can expand more on how, like, the notion of the color of food, the plates you're using, the dining room, how does all that affect somebody's consciousness from your standpoint?
There are so many different ways that color can affect your consciousness, your experience of eating, and we don't have enough time here for me to explain everything, but there is more in the book, and I could talk for hours because I love color. And I'm looking out the window actually at my garden now, and it's you know, in its winter phase, but I still see all the different colored vegetables. I like to get everything in the most unusual colors possible. I've got purple carrots and orange carrots and yellow carrots, and even I'm looking out at my chickens, and they lay green and blue and peach-colored eggs. So color is very important to me. But the way that you eat, it can make a big difference. For instance, red can stimulate your appetite. They've done research that pink can calm people down. People in psych wards, they'll often paint the walls pink because it's supposed to have a soothing effect. Green can aid in digestion. So that is one way. There's another way of looking at colors, and as I mentioned before with the chakra meals, that each of our, we have seven energy centers. It's based on ancient Indian wisdom that within our body, and each one is represented by a different color, and color has frequency and vibration. So, for instance, red is a very long wavelength, if you're looking at it from the physics of it, and it's a base chakra. It's the color for vitality and passion. And so if you want to ignite those qualities in your life, you might want to eat a red meal. If you need more sense of spirituality, of opening yourself up to the divine, you might want to eat something in the purple or white range, and that's a very high frequency, very fast vibration when you're looking at the color wavelengths of that. Also, different colors of course, in food represent different pigments. So there are different phytonutrients and micronutrients in each of the foods that can make a difference on a very, on a very small kind of, oh goodness, I'm losing my words, but you know what I mean, on the, as far as the actual nutrients in the food. And then they've done studies on the way that we perceive food based on color, which is pretty interesting. For instance, you know, the example I like to use is, imagine a gray watermelon. It wouldn't taste the same. The experience wouldn't be the same at all. And they've done these studies where they did one with orange juice, where they gave the test participants a glass of orange juice and had them rate its sweetness, or two side by side. And the darker one, the one that was more orange, people said tasted sweeter. And then they actually added extra sugar to the lighter orange one, so it was much sweeter, but people still thought the darker orange one tasted sweeter, because we have such a strong connection in our mind between color and taste. So you can use color to access different qualities, different energies, different feelings, emotions, and you can use it in the food that you eat, the plates that you eat off of, your table settings, and even in the colors that you choose for your dining room and kitchen can all have a great effect. And this is kind of a survey here of color and food and consciousness, but we have much more detail in the book about
it.
Sure,
I understand. Let me ask you a question, though. How do people then who you give your green and blue eggs to respond?
Well, you know, the interior actually looks and tastes the same, but for some people,
but do they rate it differently?
Yeah, they do. You know, some people it is, because we're not accustomed to eggs being green. Some people are actually put off by it at first, and that has to do with mass farming, because that's actually brown. It's a much more common color in chicken breeds. Green less so, but white, there are not that many breeds of chickens that lay white eggs, but the kind that do happen to be higher producers. But we do. We have this association, like you said, with eggs being a certain color. And so for some, it takes a little time to get used to, but I think it looks so pretty.
Now, you have a chapter in the book called Legendary Meals. What makes a meal legendary, and why would you want to be doing it?
Well, a legendary meal, it's that kind of meal that people will remember for a lifetime. It is not just food. It's an experience. And it's an experience that heightens all of your senses. And in the book, we give different suggestions of different ways you can create a legendary meal. Some could be elaborate ones that take days and days to plan and orchestrate, and others could be very simple, just by making it a deeper experience. For instance, when we have guests to our ranch and I'm catering for those events, often before a meal, I will tell people what we're eating and what the ingredients are and the provenance of some of the different ingredients, but I will also take them on an inner journey. I'll have them close their eyes, and if we're having salade niçoise, I'll have them picture that they're on the south of France. I'll have them imagine the sound of the ocean and the feeling, the pebbles on the beach as they, you know, stroll on the beach, and maybe imagine what it feels like to have the cold Perrier glass in their hand, and maybe they're listening to accordion music, and all of that will heighten the experience. And so you're not just tasting the lettuce and the olives and the tuna or whatever, you know, you're eating in that particular moment, but you are feeling it on a completely sensual level. So that's one of the ways you can approach the legendary meal.
That means at Thanksgiving time, it takes you about an hour and a half to do the visualization of all the dishes.
Right.
Huh?
Well, I like to do them rather quick, because I don't like to eat the food too cold either, you know. But, you know, a legendary meal, you do it because it's fun. It's the main reason, but also, it can become a spiritual experience, that eating is not just a way of getting calories into your body. It is really a full body experience, and it can take you so much deeper and elicit really powerful emotions.
Yeah, I think you're going against what the opposite from docs used to say, you know, it doesn't matter what you eat, because you don't have to care about it. And now we found that you do have to care about what you're eating, and you're now moving it up to the next level up. And how, Because you talk in the book about a mystic chef, and how's that different from being another kind of chef or cook?
We use that word in the book. We talk about the book actually being a mystic chef apprenticeship. We have lots of activities and exercises. And being a mystic chef is not just about putting food together and making something that can be, you know, edible or delicious. That it's really something that goes much deeper. It's about the energy, the love, the joy you put in there. Recently, I received an email from a woman who said, I can't wait to try some of the things in your book, but she says, I'm the kind of person who even manages to burn water. And becoming a mystic chef is, it's even for the people who don't consider themselves cooks, people who don't even like cooking, but they like eating well, or they want to enrich their lives, that there are things that you can do that actually aren't even about turning the stove on and cranking up the oven or chopping vegetables, that it's about the way that you treat your food, the way that you think about the people who grew it and planted it and transported it and prepared it. It's the whole process that goes into eating and living well in a balanced and harmonious way. So mystic chefs can be chefs of top caliber, or they can be someone who enjoys eating a good, you know, sandwich from your local deli, but puts a little love and energy or says grace over it before they take it into their body.
So you have a lot of delicious recipes, it looks like, in the book, but you also encourage people to use their dreams and intuition when cooking. So how do people blend those together?
Yeah, and it seems a bit like it could be a bit of an oxymoron, a book with recipes that tells you, oh, no, just use your intuition.
Yeah, change the damn thing.
Yeah, exactly, which as the creator of the recipes, there's a little part of me when people say, oh, I changed this and that, that's like, yes, right on, you use your intuition. This little part of me that's like, oh, God, but the recipe was already perfect as is. but we talk about using your intuition, and I'm a very intuitive cook when I cook. I love cookbooks, and I have way more than I could even read an entire lifetime, but I will continue to buy more, I'm sure. But I usually cook with, you know, this inspiration. I get an idea, a flavor, a taste, a vision in my mind of how I want something to be, and then I go about creating it with what I can find and putting it together. So I don't usually use the many cookbooks I have. So that is one way you can use your intuition. We also in the book offer suggestions on how you can tap into your intuition to find the foods that work best for you in that time. It could be ones for you that are best for your health, best for igniting a certain feeling or emotion. You can use food to access deep-seated memories and call them to the surface, to work through childhood programming, childhood pain, childhood joy, even into your back far past of your past lives or your ancestral cellular memory. So there are a number of different ways that that you can go about doing that.
So do you ever have an oops dish, and what do you do about it?
Sometimes I just keep on working until I can salvage it. And other times, you know, you just have to realize, like, I'm having an off day, and this one's going to the chickens, you know?
and the chickens are going yum.
Yeah, exactly. Fortunately, that doesn't happen to me too often. But sometimes I have noticed when I'm tired or I'm just not in a good mood, I can take ingredients that I usually cook with and cook them in a way I usually do, and it doesn't have the magic. And other times I can take some things that seem not that great to begin with, and there's just pure magic there.
So
it does make a difference.
So for my listeners, if you'd like to explore the magic that Meadow's talking about, you can go to her website, themysticcookbook.com, themysticcookbook.com. Meadow, thanks for being a guest today on Healthy Alternatives.
Thank you so much. It's been such a joy.
My guest next week is going to be Tom Cavanaugh. Tom has 3 decades of sales experience and a rich background in neurolinguistic programming, hypnotherapy, and accelerated learning. He's got a BA in clinical hypnotherapy and a master's in transpersonal psychology. And he's certified not only in NLP, but also mind mapping and photo reading. He's also a veteran of the Marine Corps and the creator of the release technique, which really helps people who have post-traumatic stress disorder. And we're going to be talking to him about photo reading. Photo reading is a way for you to read amazing quantities of material in minutes. You're not going to want to miss this one. This is Dr. Jerry Teplitz. You can find out more about me at teplitz.com, or you can follow me on Facebook and Twitter. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for being with us today for Healthy Alternatives. For more information about Dr. Teplitz and his availability for speaking engagements, please click on the globe on the webtalkradio.net page in front of you, or go to teplitz.com. You may also follow him on Facebook and Twitter by using the icons on the page. To find out more about his books, please click on any of the book covers you see. Eat well, rest well, take a breath, get some exercise, and we'll see you again right here next week for another edition of Healthy Alternatives.